of the call to order and the approval of the minutes. And then we'll get into the Office of the Compliance Advisory Board. So with that, you ready?
No, not yet.
Nope, not yet. Okay, I'll wait. Okay, stay with me. All right, so I'll call the meeting to order, seeing as we have a quorum. So can the clerk call the roll?
Anderson?
Here.
Bataglia?
Present.
Bensel? Cotman? DeRusse?
Here.
Fitch? Hatch?
Here.
Howard?
Here.
Jason?
Here.
Thank you.
Coffin?
Here.
Kim?
Yeah.
Cruiser?
Yep.
Lowe? Martinez?
Here.
Michael? Quinn?
Here.
Ulysses? Van Loan?
Here.
Waymack?
Here.
Winarto?
Here.
So I have 15 in attendance. It's actually pretty good. Okay, so does anyone have any late additions to the agenda that they'd like to bring up? Matt?
Thank you, and I apologize about my seat and some food. It'll be tied to Compliance Advisor, but it can go after them. So RSP reference to their time, it's a resolution of support, but I believe the Compliance Advisor will have some stuff they'd like to talk about first, so.
Okay, so is that, did you want to add it to the late additions, or?
Wherever is most convenient for the Assembly to hear it. It's just a matter of, I know we don't have time to get to it today, but the intent is just to ensure the Assembly is aware.
Second for late additions.
Okay, so there's a second to have Matt's resolution come up for the late additions to the agenda. We'll now move into discussion on the motion to amend the agenda. If you'd like to speak on that motion to amend the agenda, please raise your hand or placard. Okay, seeing as there's no one on the speakers list, I'll call the question. If you're in favor of amending the agenda to put Matt's resolution regarding the Office of the Complainants Advisors under the late additions to the agenda, please raise your hand or placard. If you're opposed, you'd like to abstain? Okay, by a vote of 14-0-1, the agenda has been amended, and that'll go to late additions to the agenda. So we'll now move on to the approval of the meeting minutes. You can turn to the meeting minutes if you would like to motion to approve or table the meeting minutes if you haven't had a chance to review them. That's your call. So.
Motion to table until end of meeting, right before Matt's resolution.
Okay, so there's been a motion to lay on the table and place the discussion of the October 7th meeting minutes also on the late additions to the agenda. Is there a second on that motion?
Second.
There's a second. Is there any dissent on that motion? All right, seeing no dissent, the minutes will be tabled until the late additions. Okay, so with that, I'm actually going to ask that we amend the agenda to move the Office of the Complainants Advisors report in front of the Assembly reports. Is there any dissent to that? Seeing no dissent, you have the floor. Thank you for bearing with us.
Great. Thank you, everyone, for having us. I know a lot of people worked very hard to put us on the agenda in the first semester, so very grateful and happy to be here. We are the Office of the Complainants Advisors. My name is Christina. I'm the senior CA.
I'm Julia Venser. I'm a 3L who's also a Complainants Advisor.
And what we do and who we are Title IX procedural advocates. We are law students hired by Cornell University to guide students through Cornell's internal policy 6.4, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. And we are here today to, one, raise awareness of our office, and two, to perhaps ask the Assembly for their guidance on how we can best navigate next semester. So that being said, ideally, what we would like to have our office do is we would want to position our office in a way that we can meet with potential complainants before they go to the Title IX office. And so for obvious reasons, We want to be able to speak with the students early on because our primary mandate is to ensure that students make an informed decision. And so Julia can speak on why this has been an issue for us and why meeting complainants either midway through or near the end of the complaint process is so detrimental to our case.
Yeah, that's definitely accurate. We have had issues in the past where we have complainants go into the office and make a statement before we can offer them our guidance, and it can be damaging to the complainant's case if they have to add additional evidence later or if they have to adjust the facts of their case later. And so it's really crucial for us to be able to meet with them at the very beginning before they file their complaint so that we can help them discuss their options and figure out where they want to go with their case.
So this is our second year as the CA office. In our first year, we spent a lot of time working on inherited cases that we had before, and mostly they were in the appeals process. And so not only were we learning how to figure out and navigate through policy 6.4, but we had a lot of cases that we worked on. Last year, from 2016 to 2017, we had 18 complainants. And this number does not reflect those who reached out to us asking for questions and had very particularized or specific questions, and they didn't want to proceed with us any further in their individual complaints. This semester, from August 1st until yesterday, we have had 20 complainants reach out to us and want to file a formal complaint. So obviously the numbers are reflective of the campus climate survey that came out very recently. And so in light of this dynamic, we really want to get ahead and be able to reach the students so that we can help them navigate the formal complaint process. How we are different is that we are students, yet we don't have a duty to report to anyone. We are highly confidential, and we are also independent of the Title IX office. So we mirror that of the JCCs, where the JCCs represent the respondents, independent of the Title IX office, we represent the complainants. However, before we started our outreach efforts, what happened was that complainants were unaware of our office and they would proceed in this formal complaint on their own. Midway through, they would find out about us and either work with us together or proceed while just asking us questions from a distance. The respondents, on the other hand, once they're notified that a formal complaint has been filed against them, they are notified at the same time that the JCC office is available for them. So obviously, before going into the formal complaint process, they have a procedural advocate who would guide them. And because formal evidence rules don't apply in the internal process at Cornell, it's imperative that we can work with students to ensure that not only is their case served the best of our ability and the best way that Cornell can service its students, but also to ensure that students don't feel like the process or the Title IX office failed them. That being said, some of the difficulties that we've had is obviously visibility, even basic things like a website. So this year, in our second year, Julia and I, along with other members of our office, we wanted to create a website that mirrors that of the JCCs. And currently, the JCCs are jcccornell.edu, something like that. It's very simple. It has their contact information, what they do, and just very basic information like that. When we tried to get a same website, the IT people, while very helpful, asked us for any kind of indicia of legitimacy so that they know that we're not trolling or we're fake or whatnot, and they don't want to obviously give us the Cornell domain if we are not legit. So that's an obvious problem that we had because the nature of what we do and the type of clients that we meet, it's not something that they can make a decision on right away. I think a lot of our complainants take time to think about what has happened to them internally, and also it takes a lot of time for them to come to a point where they realize that the next option for them is to file a formal complaint. So we think that having that kind of visibility and that platform for them to consider their options would be one way of making us more accessible and available. So that being said, we do not know the best way to go about getting this kind of form of acknowledgement for the IT office. Obviously, the Title IX office in their impartiality cannot help us because it's what they do. They have to remain impartial. The law school has offered us other resources. Next semester, we're going to have a physical office for the complainants. So while they can help us to that end, and of course, our office is staffed by law students, a website is also something that we couldn't find support in our own law school administration. So that's one thing that we were hoping to get some form of insight or guidance from the assembly. Secondly, we know that VP Ryan Lombardi and Kathy Zoner sends out multiple emails throughout the semester with information that we think is pertinent and, of course, very important, but sometimes they don't get readily received by students and they don't get the attention that they warrant. And so what I have with me is just what we as law students get from our Dean of Students. It's a list of resources that are available. Currently, our contact information is not on SHARE website. And we think that because of the specialized nature of our services that we give to students, we think that's imperative that we also have our information available, because we think that working through the formal complaint process is a very important and integral part of coming to terms with sexual assault violence and prevention in the future. So that is a secondary issue that we hope to gain support from the assembly. So to recap, we would like some form of website and whatever documents that's necessary for us to get that. Secondly, we would like for our information to be available on SHARE and perhaps even distributed by a campus-wide listserv, if possible. So that is some of the pressing concerns that we've had. We understand that we are here for a limited time. We also want to field some questions if you have any. Yes. Yeah. And the reason why this is important is because as of right now, the only resource center that work closely with us are the victims' advocates. And so how it works is if, say, a potential complainant or a complainant reaches out to victims' advocate, they would discuss what the student needs and go through anything from academic accommodation to housing accommodation, et cetera. Once they come to a point where they discuss options moving forward, if the student wishes to file a formal complaint, then Nina and Laura from the Women's Resource Center would reach out to us before they go to the Title IX office. And the three of us would all sit down together. So the CA office, the victim's advocate, and the complainant. And from here, we are better able to service the students in a way that his or her needs can best be addressed. And we found that this partnership works best. And because the Title IX office is swarmed with cases, sometimes it's unreliable for both parties to be CC'd and included in the email. So we found that to be an additional reason why it's important for us to get ahead and have that partnership before we enter the Title IX office. So we are doing that currently with Victims Advocate. If we have some sort of communication or contact with the other resources, we think that we can better service students that way. Yeah, ultimately, last year, our objectives were to raise awareness of our office that it exists and to give a brief outline of what we do. This year, myself and members of our office went to the Student Assembly, GPSA, the IFC, and PanHel. And so we do go in and have particularized presentations to that end. But we think that now, in our second year moving forward, we would like to have a bit more established presence at the university, and we think that that will be very helpful moving forward as we continue to work with our office.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much. So we do have a couple people on the speakers list. Again, if you want to be on the speakers list, just raise your hand or placard. I see Anna, Richard. Okay, so first is Matt, then we have Joe, then Anna, then Richard.
First off, thank you so much for coming. I'm so glad we're able to squeeze you in the semester. Your office is incredibly important work, and I remember when we were working on 6.4 revision a number of years ago, and your office was, in essence, on the drawing board. It's a great idea. It's important that you have a procedural analog to the JCCs, because the JCCs also do incredibly important work. As you know, if we work together on it, the resolution that me and you had helped draft is relating to having the complaints advisors report to the UA annually, be confirmed, in essence, to fully make them, as far as the UA's procedures go, analogous to the JCCs. In terms of, you mentioned the website, in terms of just other documents that be on the SHARE website, we can certainly add that to the resolution, or honestly, some of those things, I suspect the assembly could just, a couple emails would provide the necessary legitimacy to get you listed where you need to go. One thing I did, or I guess two things I did note, was in terms of when a complaint is filed against someone, they're immediately notified of the JCC. In essence, so if an individual were to go talk to the JA, the JA is required to immediately notify them that JCCs exist and provide, in essence, resources before they start talking, as in, you walk in, here's a document that tell you about it. Is that something that you think would be helpful to have the almost to request that the Title IX office is part of their procedures? You, if you walk in and say, oh, I think something happened, almost before you go any further and before it trips their duty to report, they would have to provide, at least tell you, oh, by the way, before you do so, you may wish to consult. Obviously, people will do as they will. It's their right and prerogative. But in essence, to notify them before they get started of what's going on so they could seek out your office for, in essence, to plan a little bit more strategically has a bad ring to it, but really in terms of just better know their options. And so just thoughts on that. And the other one would be, is there anything aside from what you listed, anything else you think the assembly could specifically help you on? I know we have a resolution that we work together on writing, as well as other things which I suspect will add to it. But is there anything else in terms of staffing? I know you said you're getting an office, but what can we do to help ensure that your office is the best it can possibly be?
Great. Thanks for your question, Matt. So Matt and I are colleagues at the law school, and I know that he worked tirelessly to get us on the agenda today. So a few points. We have asked the Title IX coordinator that when a complainant comes in, that she reads the resources that are available right now and to obviously put our information on there. The problem is, however, when a complainant goes in, obviously overwhelmed with information, even if someone says, oh, and if you'd like procedural advocates, here is the CA office. I feel like so much is lost in that kind of rendering of information, because from the student's perspective, how is he or she supposed to know that the CA office are procedural advocates and what they do is apply and implement the policy? So to that end, while we have asked Sarah Affle and hopefully her predecessor to kind of mention our office, we find that it's ineffective, to be candid. It's very ineffective because as of right now on the Title IX website, if you go through multiple tabs, you do find our email address. But again, it's the same issue where when you have the SHARE website, CUPD, our office, Victims Advocate, and who else, the crisis line and everything, whatnot, Cornell Health, our office gets kind of lost in the weeds. And obviously each resource and each support group offer valuable resources for students. However, when it comes to the formal complaint process, we have went through each step of the investigation and the adjudication process, so we know exactly how the policy is implemented and applied. We also know what a hearing panel looks like. We have sat through one. We know what kind of writing that the Title IX office looks for. So to that end, I feel like when a student has made the informed decision to file a formal complaint, we feel like our resources and our services are that much more imperative at that stage. So I think that answers your first question, where they still kind of mention our office. The second point is, if we can't get the Title IX office to take that one step, additional step, and explain what exactly a procedural advocate does, then I think that's part of the reason why we are here today, where if we have a visible platform where students can interact with us and gain whatever information they have before they go to the Title IX office, then even if, say, the Title IX office just kind of lists a host of resources and ours is part of it, he or she would understand what exactly a procedural advocate is. And I think that's kind of how we're trying to get ahead of it. In terms of how we're going to do that, I think starting off, like, basic bottom line is stuff like website, having our information on SHARE, and perhaps even being distributed on a campus-wide listserv, not necessarily that of the law school. So earlier this semester, I met with Joe Burke. I believe he's the director of campus life and engagement. And so next semester, not only are we going to present for the new students in January for their orientation, but we're going to sit down with RAs and let them know how to react in a situation where a student comes to them. Obviously, they have a duty to report, but then I feel like because they tend to be the people that are the first line of contact for students who have experienced something traumatic or assault for that matter, then they can either list out a host of resources where ours is available, or even take that additional step and connect us with that student, something like that. And so we are going to be working with Joe starting from next semester at the TechCon Center, I believe for first years. In their weekly newsletter, our information and our contact address will be on that newsletter as well. So we have made steps like that where we have specialized and kind of targeted outreach. But again, to recap, we do want a more campus-wide kind of presence. Does that answer your question?
It absolutely does. Thank you so much for your work. I'll be happy to talk to you after with some more details.
Thank you.
So I actually have a question.
Sure.
Have you been in contact with the with the orientation steering committee?
No, to my knowledge, no. Part of it was myself and Julia and Gargi sitting down and just Googling who we think are people of contact at the university and cold emailing them. And of course, it's discretionary whether they sit down with us.
Right.
And we have looked at the complainants we've received, and traditionally they tend to be female undergrads, although we've seen an uptick in grad students. They generally happen to be affiliated with the Greek life community, and for those reasons, we have made those targeted outreach programs. But that would be, again, another reason why it would be very helpful for us to be able to present at the assembly. Yeah.
Okay, so we have a couple more people on the speakers list. Joe?
Hi, thank you so much for coming. Obviously, what you do is so very important to this campus, and I was so happy to hear that you mentioned about you're going to expand into residential life now, because as an RA, like, I know the whole entire thing. Like, if someone would call to come to me, I submit the form, goes to my supervisor, goes to the Title IX office, and then that person would get a caring and concern letter, which would basically say, like, here's everything you have. So that leads me to my first question. Are you on that letter, and are you, like, very spelled out on it? Like, this is procedural over the other ones, because, like, there's so much on that. And then my second point is, I lost my second point. No, that's, I lost it. So, yeah, first question only.
And feel free to jump in, but as of right now, to our understanding, the only kind of informational sheet that our contact information is listed on is that of the Title IX office. So Sarah Affle, when she goes around giving presentations, she has the blue and red, what to do if you're a complainant, what to do if you're a respondent. And I believe on the second page near the bottom, we have our address handle. So that would, again, be another great resource for us to tap into.
Karen list. It's that's when she just reaches out and says, like, here are your options, and then follows up. We're not actually 100% sure if we're on that, if we're on that list. I think what would be helpful, though, is I know Matt mentioned that the JA basically says, like, you have the right to representation. I think maybe a stronger wording of that to complainants as well, instead of saying, here are your resources, maybe we would like to see them say, you have the right to representation, and these are the people you should talk to, instead of just being on a list of, you know, like the crisis hotline and victims advocates and sort of lost in a sea of other people they can reach out to. I think maybe students need a little bit more clear direction from Title IX. I don't know. We've talked to them a lot about this, and I don't know if maybe we might need help, you know, trying to get a more formal directive to Title IX with how they need to phrase.
So I was wondering if you are, because it seems like from your law school's perspective, you're kind of lacking on, like, undergraduate connections across this campus and what undergraduates feel are the top, you know, places that they go to. So I guess my question is, have you ever considered adding someone into the fold of all of you on staff that might just be like an undergrad that can help you, who's really well connected? Because I think that would be something that would be so fantastic.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea.
Right now, I was actually an undergrad here. I'm in my seventh year at Cornell, so I'm pretty familiar with
everything.
With that, but yeah, I'm graduating. Yeah. So I think in the future, like, it would be super helpful to have someone either who was a Cornell undergrad, because we have a large presence at the law school, a lot of people that weren't Cornell undergrads, or someone who, you know, can give more insight into the undergrad life, because even I might be a little out of touch at this point, but I think that's definitely a great suggestion.
Yeah, definitely. Like, when we were moving forward, like, the whole student assembly shared governance, it was something that I had to ask Julia, because she knows how these things work on the undergrad level. That being said, because at the crux of our office, we are procedural advocates, and we mirror that of the JCCs, and both offices are staffed by law students. I think in the future, if we have a growing need for that kind of ambassador, then obviously our office is open to it. But as of right now, we are in our second office, and we're just trying to kind of plant our roots.
Yeah, still trying to figure out what our role is.
Anna?
Thank you for coming, and thank you for your patience with us. Obviously, the elephant in the room is our number of open Title IX complaints at the Department of Education. So I have one quick and one lengthier question related to that. Quick one, is there any hot water you can foresee us accidentally wandering into here by raising your prominence as in some ways an alternative to going to the Title IX advisors?
We're not really an alternative because Title IX, they conduct investigations. There's no advising component really within Title IX. And I understand where your concern is coming from because we wouldn't want to open it up to saying like Title IX isn't neutral anymore and the university isn't neutral anymore, which is obviously a concern. I think what we're hoping for is just to really achieve the same level of prominence as the JCCs. And if once, because right now it's a little bit uneven, which is understandable since like Tina said, like it's only our as advisors, but yeah, that's really what we're looking for is just to, you know, to achieve equivalence with them and not necessarily skew it one way or another. And I think that that might be the way that we could get ourselves into hot water, but so long as we're staying even, I think it should be fine.
Yeah, and to kind of piggyback on Julia's point, before coming in today, I did a quick Google through the archives of the resolution that the UA has passed. And obviously we find a lot of resolutions that talk about JCCs. I know one recently was a resolution talking about a law school faculty member as a formal advisor. So that would be something where we see an imbalance where we also have a law school faculty who works as our advisor, but there isn't any kind of paperwork for the university to base or for us to base our kind of office on. To your point, Anna, I think at this point, like what Julia said, we are trying to play catch up with the JCCs. When we do meet with the complainants, it really is that of a support group in the beginning. We talk about, you know, I'm sorry this happened, I'm here to help, let's talk about what you need. And that's how we proceed. And oftentimes, many of the complainants choose not to file a formal complaint, in which case it doesn't implicate the Title IX office at all. What we're asking for, however, is for us to be on an even par with the JCCs, because although there are open cases against the university, what we think a disparity is at the student level is complainants sometimes tell us saying, I wish I spoke with you guys sooner. I wish I was able to kind of talk things out with someone who's confidential, who had no duty to report before I went in and gave a statement that is recorded, transcribed, given into a transcript form, and then kind of distributed to both parties. So whereas the JCCs and the respondents come in having done that preparation. So obviously we are on one side of the spectrum, but we think that this is an effort to kind of get to the middle.
And follow up to that, and I think I know the answer, but I am trying to get it out here because it seems like we are going to be going, most likely getting in touch with an awful lot of offices and possibly making our own arguments to these offices. And we know that all those open investigations is a concern at the moment. I'm obviously coming from the survivor advocacy side, but I know that people in this room as well are concerned about false rape accusations. So do you foresee this kind of, I don't want to say equality, but parallel structure from the start, parallel resources, and it sounded like there's been a lot of confusion in cases halfway through as you guys only get involved very late. So the clarity that can result from this, do you foresee that possibly helping avoid future complaints to the Department of Education if we take these steps to...
Yeah, of course. So Julia and I are going to try to kind of unravel that question and let us know if we don't kind of fully take on it. You know, speaking candidly, our perspective is that of how to ensure that we do our job and to fulfill our mandate, which is to ensure that students who come to us feel supported, that we give them all the information that we have, that our office has, and to ensure that when they do proceed, they don't feel alone in this. And oftentimes, Julia can attest to this, things go to Ithaca court, and so there is a pause in the university one, it goes criminal, civil, and then we come back. So we are very familiar with cases that go all over the place. Ultimately, and I'm not sure if this answer is going to be very satisfactory, but from our perspective right now, we want to ensure that we can position ourselves in a way where we can best help students who come to us and who need it. And I feel like open Title IX investigations against the university is perhaps better handled by the administrators and at that level. What we hope to do is...
Then let me back up. Do you think this will give us faster, fairer, clearer investigations
if we get in?
Yes,
honestly, I think
to say, I think we would hope, but the investigation process is so heavily guided by the Title IX office, and we're really just at their mercy for the most part. We get emails, we get deadlines, but, you know, it's just, it's so steered by them. And I, yeah, it's really hard to say. We would hope, but it's not clear.
We work to the best that we can. People in our office, all the advisors, we work through all the breaks. Julia and myself, we've handled cases throughout our summer while we were working. And of course, throughout winter break, everyone in our office has one or two, max three ongoing cases right now. And we fully expect to be working through winter break as well. And I think to kind of, you know, from the bottom and moving up, we want to be able to make the student feel like the university is making affirmative steps to ensure that they feel supported throughout this process. And hopefully in the long run, that would be one step in ensuring that students don't feel like the university failed them in this process. But like what Julia said, so much of how the Title IX office conducts the investigation and the adjudication is out of our control.
Richard.
So question about, I mean, it seems to me like the problem is, as you're presenting it, is asymmetry between defendants and complainants, if we can call them. And so the complainants, as I understand it, or not the complainants, the defendants become aware of resources available to them in an email message that says you've been complained against and you have these resources. Is that right? Why is it so much more efficient for the defendant to become aware of resources than it is for the complainant? And then I have a follow-up, but let me ask that. Is it because they're routinely at the point they need it told?
Yeah, I kind of think that it's a little bit tough. We're up against the fact that, you know, complainants have to go in of their own volition and make a complaint, whereas the respondent is being notified because the complaint's already been made. So they are receiving the resources after it's already underway. So it's a little bit tough.
So the asymmetry is produced in part by the procedure, the routinization of the procedure. The second part of this question has to do with the complaint itself. The complaint itself cannot be revised, because if it could be revised, then they could say, you filed a complaint, these resources are available to you, and send them to you, and it'd be Matt's point. But if the complaint can't be revised, then they lose that advice. So that's the problem.
Everything appears in the record. Nothing gets like redacted unless there's, you know, statements made under like a few grounds, but everything remains in the record throughout the entire process. So if they make the complaint and the complaint gets drafted, that there's not really a process for it to get.
So they can revise the complaint, but they can't lose the original. They can't.
I don't even know if the complaint can be revised. Do you know? I just know that typically everything remains, it gets compiled into one long appendix and
That would be the suggestion. Yeah. If they can ditch the, you know, eliminate the original one and say, you know, you could resort, then they're getting you as resources right at the point they need it. So that would revive Matt's point about, you know, the point of intervention. Because the asymmetry looks like it's a procedural one. It's not an informational one, it's a procedural one. And I mean, if I can make that distinction.
Yeah.
So I would really work on that.
Okay, I have 2 points to that. So in the beginning, when we found out that the Title IX office was not mentioning our office as part of the resources, at our request, the Title IX office did say that they would mention us. And so we went one step further and asked them, is it at all possible for you to give this information and perhaps explain to the complainant what we do, kind of what we were just discussing earlier. And the rationale that we heard from the Title IX office is that it takes so much courage and just a lot of time and thinking to come into the office to give a statement. And so from the Title IX office, they think that by giving them information and kind of telling them about us, that is a soft deterrent, and they don't want to turn away students. That's the kind of explanation that we were given. I think that might touch on your point in the sense that if they can go back and revise it, then perhaps we would be at equal standing with the JCCs. But again, because we have different interests than that of the Title IX office, I think for them, it's a lot about expediency and to ensure that they don't do anything that can come across as turning away students. And even if something, from our perspective, it seems very innocent, just kind of explaining in more detail what our office does, even that can perhaps be construed as being a deterrent. And so I think that's part of the reason why. And of course, expediency, the Title IX office is swamped with cases right now. So that would obviously add to the timeline of things. But whether it is more of like an information problem or a procedure problem, we don't know yet, but we thought that we would just kind of go around and present here today to be safe.
And just to clarify, they go in and they give a statement which is transcribed, and that's the beginning of the investigation. So they don't really write out a complaint or anything. They don't give a written statement. It's all oral. It's spoken. And so, you know, I don't know if there's any room in the current policy 6.4 for that statement, the transcribed statement, to be revised, since it's already, you know, it's the investigation has begun. The investigator's questioning and the complainant is giving a response. And for some, that's the first time they're telling their story. So it's coming out in, you know, not as clear of a way as it might if they had a chance to talk it out with somebody first. So that's our concern, basically.
Jeremy?
So I'm just trying to think through the process as I understand it at this point, which I'm sure is very simplified. At what point are you interested in being involved in this? Is it first point of contact? Is it prior to the recording of this first presentation? Or is it sometime thereafter that you would like to be involved?
Ideally, we would like to be in contact with the student before he or she enters a Title IX office. And so part of our prep, our introductory kind of meeting with them, is we talk about what they need. And even before we talk about the Title IX office, we go through the basics, like, is he or she safe? Does he or she need any other accommodation, et cetera? And that's part of the training that we get every year. And then once we talk about options and the idea of a formal complaint comes up, we then talk about his or her story. And part of our job is to ask the difficult question of, I believe your story, but what is his story going to be? And then we discuss again. And then afterwards, once he or she wants to make that formal complaint, we would go in with the complainant and sit down with her as he or she gives her statement. So ideally, we'd want to be with the student before he or she meets with the Title IX office.
Okay. So I'm just trying to think through logistics of how that would occur. If a complaint walked into the wanted to make a report. Mm-hmm. They have to go someplace to make this report. And I understand this is going to be a difficult thing for them, so it's got to be someplace that feels relatively safe for them.
Right.
It also needs to be a very official, documented, so that nothing falls through the cracks. It has to have the oversight. What is your thought on how this would work? Is it when they walk in, the Title IX officer says, as we take your statement, would you like to have someone from your office present to help you through this? Or I'm just interested in logistics and how you see this operating, because it'll help me then understand how we can help you.
Sure, okay. So 2 points, how about I'll go and you go again? So 2 points is, first, if we were to come in contact with the student, kind of irrespective of the Title IX office, earlier we were discussing the partnership that we have with Victims Advocate, where the Nina and Laura would reach out to us once they kind of discern what the student needs and what the student would like to do. In which case we would all sit down, talk about everything, and then head to day hall together. So that would be an ideal kind of situation with our office working with the other resources. We have requested the Title IX office to just kind of, again, just we kept pressuring them to kind of make our office known to the students who come in. So what they have done for us is, say if the student says she wishes to speak with a procedural advisor, then the Title IX office would then email us with the student CC'd and say, you know, with so-and-so's permission, we are reaching out to you. In all future correspondence, please remove the Title IX office. And so from there, we would then reach out to the student. and then that would also work very well too. What we hope to avoid is when, say, all the paperwork is in and all the statements are given, when you have just the hearing left, then we would come in. And of course, we can still offer support and services at that point, but it's not, you know, the best situation for us.
Anything? Yeah, I think that what I would like to see is maybe some kind of official directive saying to the Title IX office, when a student comes in for a complaint, the first thing you say to them is you have the right to have representation with you or an advisor with you, instead of making it in a convoluted, because right now what happens is the Title IX coordinator sits down with that student, shows them a piece of paper, gives what we understand to be like a 10-minute speech talking about, you know, what's going to happen, here are your options. Mm-hmm. Whereas we would just like it to be way more simple than that and just say you have the right to an advisor from the complainant's advisor's office to be represented through this process. Would you like to wait until we can put you in contact with someone? That's it. We just want it to be way more straightforward than it is. But they don't do that. It's hidden away in a, you know, a speech along with a lot of other information.
So this is ideal, and what I've kind of explained to everyone here is what's happening right now.
So we have exhausted the first speakers list. Does anyone else want to be on the first speakers list? Okay, Alec and then Catherine.
Have they been opposed to doing that? Have you requested that they do that?
Yeah.
Did they give you a reason why?
It kind of goes into the earlier rationale that we discussed, how it may seem as a form of deterrent for the student. Where if you tell the student, would you like to wait, then say from the Title IX's office, they don't want the student to get any kind of indicia of them not being ready to take their statement.
I see.
Yeah.
Catherine, explain exactly that question, tying into the whole software thing. Like, what is the basis for that kind of conclusion? Is there any kind of research that's been done to actually show that? Because when you go in to make a statement completely alone versus going in to make a statement with support, you think the support would be better. So, like, what are these to back up that kind of statement?
You know, they've been doing this far longer than we have. So when they gave us their rationale, we just kind of asked them, okay, then, like, at least CC us in the emails. But we hope that it would change. We were involved with in the meeting with VP of HR and the search consultants for the next Title IX coordinator. So we have told the consultants the kind of qualities and the kind of procedural kind of components that we would like to see and that have worked for us. So hopefully that would be part of the consideration when they search for the next coordinator. But again, this is all something that we will probably have to tell the coordinator again when he or she comes in.
Charlie?
Every university as a law school must have a group like yours. Do they encounter the same difficulties?
So, actually, I did a quick Google search last year of anything similar to what we do, and I think every school has the equivalent of a JCC, but whether or not there's the equivalent of our office was ambiguous. I think Cornell was new, and it was kind of on top of it when they created our office. I'm not sure what their office would do, but I imagine that some of the problems that we encounter here is not different from that of other campuses.
So we'll move on to the second speakers list, but I want to note that we are kind of a little bit over on the time, so I just wanted to note that.
Motion to extend the time allocated this to the complaints advisors by 10 minutes.
I think we've already done that.
I think we're just going to
just keep
going on it.
All right, how about we just like keep going then? So yeah, Joe, and then Linda.
I'm really concerned that eventually you're going to see like just a sheer capacity that you're not going to be able to handle. Like, I'm really concerned that you get yourself out there in all of these cases. Like, that's my first concern, because if you're going like, I can, like, for the number of resident advisors who encounter this issue, like on a weekend, trust me, I know, like, it's, you can, things happen on a weekend that resident advisors, we all have experienced once in our lifetime, but I'm really concerned that if you're in all these conversations at once, you're eventually going to reach a point where like your office just needs to expand, and I kind of like, you really want to expand in your outreach and getting into like possibly the care and concern letter or getting yourself there before someone makes their complaint to the Title IX office. So I'm extremely concerned about just the sheer capacity. I mean, you said you're working over your summer, over your winter breaks. Like, are there plans to make sure your office keeps growing as these caseloads seem to keep growing as well with you?
Well, so to answer your question, we, looking at our colleagues at the JCC's office, we understand that they handle all forms of cases outside of policy 6.4, and they seem to make it work for numerous years. So I think for us, we have expanded our office by another person. And so as of right now, we have 5 advisors so that when Julia, myself, and another 3L graduate, there would be 2 more who are hired. So we would have that kind of functionality going. In the event that we see just a lot, like what you said, if we are swarmed and if we're overwhelmed, then I'm sure that the law school and the university can work to expanding our office. But again, that isn't a concern for us at the moment, because the fact of the matter is complainants reach out to us, but maybe 50% of them decide to file a formal complaint. Yeah.
Linda?
Yes. Sorry, I missed the beginning of your presentation. You maybe answered this question, but please indulge me. I'm wondering, what can we do to help you? Is there anything, I mean, you've named a few specific things that could be written up.
Right.
And so I'm just wondering, is that what you would hope for? Is
yeah.
there, okay.
So Gabe is giving me a sign.
Yeah, so
okay.
I can, how about I say what I got, and then you can confirm slash add so that we can, so you
okay.
want a website, you want to like have a formal website, and then also you want information about your office to be distributed on kind of a campus-wide list. And then the third thing is you want the Title IX coordinator to tell people when they report a complaint, to say when a student comes to you, tell the student they have the right to an advisor to represent you. So those are the 3 things that I have. Does that capture your essential request more or less? If I'm missing something, that's...
No, I think you're spot on.
Okay, so we got it. So we're on the same page?
Just something more about the visibility. I mean, a website is one thing.
Sure.
There might be more.
Well, starting from next semester, we are going to have a physical office at the law school. So that will be something that could help. We, last year and earlier this semester, we've handed out flyers at the residence halls in West Campus, just kind of wherever all the other flyers are at. And so we have done steps like that. But as of right now, I think just kind of having our information in the same kind of medium as that of the other resources would be a huge step for us.
And how are you funding the communication outreach?
Well, for the most part, it's really been just our time, really, just going in and speaking. It doesn't take much to kind of whip together a poster and print it. I use it at the law school printer. So we haven't had much of a funding problem in that respect. And because we have 5 of us this year, we were just able to kind of coordinate who goes to which outreach program, et cetera.
Funding. Jeremy?
So... I think you make a really great case. I think the information you shared, it makes me think that there's really something to work with here. And I would encourage you to reach out to our CJC and maybe in conjunction with some personnel support from the Campus Codes and Judicial Committee, and maybe with some personnel support from Campus Welfare or something, because I know they're swamped right now. We swamped right now. And I think if we can get one of our committees to do some outreach, communicate with you, communicate with the Title IX office together, hear what's going on, get that information, we could develop a resolution that might be able to help you. And I think that's the right path to take.
Naj.
Just as an outreach potential suggestion, since undergraduates are seems to be a lot of the population that are coming to your office, maybe even getting in touch with organizations or individuals of the undergraduate population who are more well-connected. Like even us as an assembly or the student assembly, reaching out with potential promotion material that we could put on our social media accounts, or that we could put on by the Cornell University Assembly or Student Assembly Facebook pages, might be another form of outreach that you can think about.
Yeah, definitely. We were pleasantly surprised with how receptive the student assembly were. I think that's where we met Jesse, who was the first RA who got us in touch with Joe Burke. So definitely it is one thing where we have received a lot of help along the way. So yeah, that's a great idea that we're probably planning on doing again next semester.
Matt, then Anna.
Thank you, and I'll be brief because we've had a lot. I just wanted to, in terms of a lot of the points, in terms of, I know, just in terms of next steps, as I said, we have a resolution that I've worked with Tina on in terms of getting them confirmed by the UA to try and give them, at least from our point of view, procedural parity. I mentioned briefly to them the idea of having them come talk to the CJC next semester in terms of actually with one of our bylaw changes, making sure that 6.4 and our stakeholder role, which is how this all links in, is under the CJC's purview, which is where it's always been traditionally, but to note that formally. But I think it's incredibly, these suggestions are all great. I've been taking a lot of notes. I know the Ombudsman already has a campus-wide email multiple times a year in terms of, so in essence, other offices that at least nominally on paper report to us have that, we can certainly do that. So in terms of whether the resolution we have for confirming you through us, a secondary resolution that goes through, and I know we've spoken offline, but to have those continuing discussions, because I think a lot of the and you mentioned this, so a lot of the imbalance, and I think Richard touched on this, is just historical based. Why is the JCC always referred to first? It's because they've been around for 30 some odd years, and over the years they have steadily chipped away at things that they thought were less than ideal, or oh, we're not getting notified or the visibility. So in essence, they have that institutional goodwill, which a new office needs a springboard to help build, and I think that's something this assembly is, from my experience, is very interested in doing. I think that I know personally I'm very happy to work with you, and I know the CJC will as well. So if anyone has any, I know I'd be happy to work with you offline and to touch upon this resolution. We need a second one to handle in terms of, aside from just concrete power but recommendations, because I think as Jerry said, there's a lot here, and our committees and the assembly I think can do quite a lot to ensure that you have visibility, especially because our resolutions go directly to the desk of the president.
Great. Anna?
Yeah. Okay, I actually have two motions to make. First, I would motion that we commit Matt's resolution to the CJC, which it did not come from.
I will dissent to that motion.
Okay, then I will retract that, and we can bring it up when we get to that motion. Other one would be, I motion just, we don't need to do a resolution for this, but that we, someone on exec on behalf of the UA email IT, for the purpose of saying, yes, these are legitimate organization that should have a website in parallel with the JCC, and please can we expedite that?
Okay, so I'll send an email.
I don't think we
need to vote on that.
No.
Does anyone disagree to me sending an email?
Awesome.
No? Great.
Yay, efficiency.
Okay, does anybody else want to be on the speakers list? No? Okay. Did you have something you wanted to add?
No,
okay.
I wanted to say one more thing. You mentioned that the majority of the people who come to you are involved with Greek life. So is there anything we could do at the administrative level, at this level, high level, to institutionalize that relationship? Like, in other words, yeah.
Yeah, so thank you for your question. When I sat down with Joe to kind of talk about something similar to what you proposed, what happened was, unfortunately, we got overshadowed by some of the events that occurred on campus this year, and I feel like that has been much of the focus, where I believe sororities and fraternities engaged in a kind of workshop in diversity. And so he told me very candidly that there might not be enough time for that this semester. And I understand that there was new leadership change in early November. So we are hopeful that sometime in January, we might be able to sit down with them. When we went and spoke with the IFC and Penn Health representatives, they were very receptive to what we had to say. So that would be something that we would love to work with.
So there's a university position where that person is designated, they're in charge, they're advisor. And so that might be something to add to your list, that advisor work closely with these folks to make sure that there's some outreach to the fraternities as well.
Kara Miller.
Okay, so that exhausts the first and second speakers list. Thank you so much for being here. I just want to stress, like, the work that you do is so important. And I mean, I think that the assembly just really appreciates the time that you put in to you know, to what you do. So thank you.
Okay. Did you want to amend the agenda quickly?
Yes, I'd like to suggest that we move up item A under business of the day, so we handle it adequately before 6 o'clock.
Yes. Second.
Any dissensions? Over here, none.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they're just presenting, but yes, technically.
Lodge, would you like to present the resolution again briefly for us?
Hi, everyone. So last week, we discussed the resolution integrating sustainable investments into endowment reports. So today, we're hoping to vote on the resolution. I think Julie will go ahead and start talking about it further.
Everyone, how's it going?
Doing well.
So I was here 3 weeks ago also. I'll briefly go over what this resolution entails. It has two, speak up one. So there are two main points of the resolution. One is on investment transparency and investment responsibility regarding the renewable energy investments that the investment committee of the Board of Trustees has for our endowment. We're asking that the Board of Trustees investment committee not only disclose regularly our investment in renewable energy in its as snapshots in the past in our currently existing endowment quarterly reports, as well as for the Board of Trustees to create an investment committee on investor responsibility, as other peer institutions have, since our investment metric for our STARS rating is currently 0.13 out of 7 points. And so we're asking that that metric is increased. And STARS suggests that we do that by creating an investment committee. And we can do that by working with the executive committee of the President's Sustainable Campus Committee and or the Senior Leaders Climate Action Group.
Is there a speakers list that I missed while I was outside?
No.
No? Okay. Okay. So, do you have something you wanted to add?
At some time when it's appropriate.
Okay. Are you finished?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, Marty.
I have just a question. Are we? This resolution's been proposed and seconded. And we are now, we're in a position to vote it. Right?
Okay, sorry I missed that.
Yes.
So we're voting on...
We're not voting yet. We're in
no.
the position
we're discussing.
To put it.
Oh, yes.
No, I'm asking whether it's been moved and seconded.
Nope.
I move the resolution.
Dissent.
Okay, so there's been a motion to vote. Is there a second on the motion?
Didn't we do that last time we met?
No.
No.
So I think now we're just talking, we're doing discussion on the resolution, and after discussion we're going to vote.
Yep.
That's normally what happens.
So,
we move the resolution, we second it, and then we have discussion on it. Isn't that the normal procedure?
No, usually we... Okay. Usually, we discuss, and then when we're done discussing, someone can motion to move the question, motion to vote, and then after someone's made the motion, if the assembly agrees to close discussion and move into voting, then that's what we'll do. So right now we're just discussing this, whether we want to pass it or amend it.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So does anyone want to discuss the resolution?
Yes, I very much like the intent of the resolution. I support the intent. I have a problem with one aspect which might be viewed as a detail, but to me it's important. So let me address it. And that's on lines 23 and 24 where it says, whereas Cornell has reduced carbon emissions by over 30% since 2008 and by almost 50% since 1990, despite the 20% growth in square footage. And I know the university reports that sometimes, and I know they continue to report it, but they also report another metric, which includes full greenhouse gas economy, which is this NOG. And in the Senior Leaders Climate Action Group report, which we put out last October, 13 months ago now, I'm the representative from the University Assembly to the Senior Leaders Climate Action Group. In that report, we clearly distinguished between the statistic which is given here and what I would call, and what the SCLAD called, the true greenhouse gas accounting for the university. And the fact is that until 2011, our central heating and electricity was produced by coal, and in 2011, we switched and went to a natural gas burning plant. And so our carbon dioxide emissions went down, and that accounts for almost all of the decrease since 2008. However, all of that plant is powered by fracked shale gas from Pennsylvania with very high methane emissions. And if you include those in the greenhouse gas accounting, then actually our greenhouse gas footprint has doubled since 2008. It's not gone down by 20%. So we could get into all of that here. My motion would be that we simply omit lines 23 and 24 and sidestep the issue, which is the simplest way, and I don't think it undercuts the intent. But to me, that's an important distinction.
Okay, so there's been a motion to strike lines 23 and 24 from the resolution.
And as an aside, I don't know how that affects lines 26 or 27 because I do not have the context. But for those who have drafted the resolution, if we strike 23 and 24, do lines 26 and 27 still work in terms of what's earlier, or should we strike those as well?
So I agree that we could strike lines 23, 24, 24, as well as lines 26 and 27, because it's really just qualifying the argument. Yet the anthropologist did give us that information in a letter, and so we were just taking it.
She did, and we'll have to work to correct it.
Right. And I as a result of your email to the committee, I actually met with Sarah Zemanek to get more clarification
okay.
on that. And it was really interesting to hear her perspective on how investments are actually a side of carbon neutrality, how it's not actually included in the metric. And so it is actually pretty irrelevant to the rest of the document if you want to just strike those.
That was my take, and as I
okay.
say, some may view as a detail, but to me it's an important detail, and it's one that the SCLAD is
agree.
Actually handling.
I agree, yeah, methane leakage.
So that is your motion to strike lines 23
through
27?
Exactly.
Okay, there's been a motion to strike lines 23 through 27. There's a second non-committal discussion on the motion. Anna?
Move the question.
Second. Second. Motion move the question. There's been a second. Is there any dissent in moving the question? Seeing no dissent, I'll ask that to be done unanimously. So is there any dissent to striking lines 23 and 27 from the 23 through 27 from the resolution? Is there any dissent to that? No. Then 23 through 27 have been struck. Let the minutes reflect that lines 23 through 27 have been struck.
Also to note, last meeting we did strike lines 6 through 8. It's just not reflected in this.
Thank document. You. I couldn't get.
Wait, I'm sorry, which line?
6 through 8.
Lines 6 through 8.
All the names are stricken.
Right. Yes. So let the minutes reflect that lines 6 through 8 have been stricken. There's that.
And then on lines 1 through 12, this would be like a friendly amendment to add that it was reviewed or passed by the Campus Infrastructure Committee.
It's on 3
yeah.
through 4.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, so the so the next person on the yeah. So the next person on the speakers list is Matt. Again, if you want to be on the speakers list, please raise your hand or flag.
So thank you so much for coming back. I read this resolution a few times. I think the heart of it is excellent. In terms of reading it, my concern is that some of the wording and the tone comes across as a little combative, and knowing that this has to go to the president eventually, frankly, has the ability to decide what to do or not do with it. There's a couple amendments I'm going to make that I think would not alter the framing of it, but restate that this is the UA's recommendation. We can't direct the board or the president to actually, we can't compel them to do things, we simply recommend, and to make that clear. So therefore, there's going to be a few amendments, and maybe we should split them. We can do that as well. First, motion to amend line 19 to read, whereas Martha Pollack informed the authors of the AY 2016-17 Resolution 36, so that as of, so in essence, strike divulged to change to informed. Then the next thing is to strike lines 29 through 32. To strike the word poultry on line 41. To strike lines 43 and 44. And to insert a resolve clause on line 49, reading, be it therefore.
Wait, after striking poultry, what was the?
Striking 43 and 44 as well.
Just taking them, okay.
We can tweak the language if we think that's prudent as well. And then the other one is to add language on line 49, be it therefore resolved, the University Assembly requests the following actions be taken. And finally, on line 65, written to read, be finally resolved that this resolution will be forwarded to the Board of Trustees, et cetera, et cetera. I'm perfectly amenable to splitting that question because it's a lot. I'm also amenable to tweaking it if it's better. I can give it to Terrell after or now, whenever is easiest for you. Because that is a lot.
It says to strike 65.
It's also hard for me.
No, we're modifying it so that it says the University Assembly will send it instead of the President.
Okay.
It seems to me we should discuss those one by one. Probably.
Absolutely. So, I
think I agree with half to two thirds, and I might disagree with some, but I'm not sure.
Okay. In that case, we will. I have a motion. Oh, yes. Well, I will draw the other portions over. Split the question.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll just. How about this? So, does anyone dissent to splitting those questions? Seeing no dissent, the question has been split. Okay, so let's talk about the first one. So the first one is on lines 19.
Change divulge to
inform. There's been a motion to amend lines 19 to remove the words divulge to and replace that with inform. Is there a second on that?
Second.
There's a second. We'll now move into discussion on the motion.
By unanimous.
That's a great idea. Both.
Okay. Is there any dissent to voting? Seeing no dissent, we'll vote. Is there any dissent to it? No. Okay, it passes. I thought she was raising her hand.
You have to strike two.
I'm sorry. Yeah, so okay. We're striking divulge two and replacing it with inform. I don't want to move too quickly. Okay, good. So then the next one is on lines 29 through 31. There's been a motion to just remove lines 29 through 31. Before you do that, is there a second?
Second.
There's been a second. Okay, so you can defend it.
Bless you. So the intent, and this is, we split it. In terms of it, reading this, I wasn't necessarily sure what this is adding to the resolution in terms of what we're really getting out of it. In terms of if I'm giving it to the president, in theory they would know this. So just in terms of what we gain by having this in there, it seemed to be at least a little bit of surplusage. But I'm more than amenable to tweaking language or other options as well.
It's a good word too, surplusage. Okay, does anyone else want to speak on this amendment? Bob?
I think I like the language as it is. I don't find it all that in your face, and it seems to me that it expresses what the community feels in terms of movement. So I would oppose taking that.
Okay. Does anyone else want to speak on the amendment? Yes.
I agree with Bob Howard in that I think it basically describes the culmination of the reason that we're describing all of these physics, and so it leads to the university understanding that we're going to continue to ask for more if this resolution is not fulfilled.
Marie.
It's a semantic thing, but on line 30, should it be towards renewable energy-based businesses instead of just renewable-based businesses? It seems like the word energy is missing.
So is that a motion to amend
the amendment? It's a typo, so we can just fix it.
Okay. I guess that's like on the borderline between typo. Not typo. Whatever. I'll just talk about you with that after. Yeah, but we're still talking about. There's been a motion to remove lines 29 through 31 completely. We're on the first speaker's list. So Anna, you're supposed to start.
We write resolutions because we have opinions. Like, yes, this has some confrontational language. This is an issue that deserves some confrontation. I'm with Bob on not striking these particular lines, and I'm wondering about the allocation of our time to a number of these edits.
Okay, Matt?
Thank you. And actually, I was going to, withdraw the amendment after, in terms of my concern is also was really the duplicity of having 4344 in terms of, I believe they're echoing the same thing. As I said, I'm open to discussion about this. It's just in terms of not having too much time spent on duplicating effort. I will draw that.
Okay, so withdrawing the motion, but since it's been stated to the assembly, we technically have to vote on it. Is there any dissent?
You don't have to. You can withdraw with the unanimous consent of the assembly.
Yeah, just a majority vote of the assembly. So does anyone dissent to withdrawing the motion? No? Okay, so then we're not going to strike lines 29 through 31. Will, what was the next?
4041, poultry.
Okay, so there's been a motion to strike the word poultry on line 41. Is there a second? Sorry. There's a second. We'll now move into discussion on the motion. Would anyone like Bob?
I support Ed's little, and it's clear. It's clear to poultry, what would we call it? I don't know.
Okay. So does anyone, Marie?
Should we also remove A poultry is having to say scoring 0.03 out of 7?
Yes. Okay. We'll take that out.
Taking out A
poultry. Yeah. So.
41.
Oh, just poultry.
No. Yeah. So it's on line 41. On line 41, it would read metric, comma, zero, a scoring 0.13 out of 7.0 points, semicolon.
Which is really poultry, but we're not saying
so. Which is poultry, but we're not saying so. Does anyone else want to speak on that poultry amendment?
Motion to call the question.
No? Okay. So, Paul, does anyone dissent to the motion to amend it as such?
Well, I have a point of
okay.
information. I mean, scoring 1.3 out of 7 points could be a positive in a sense that, you know, sometimes the lower the score, the better. But I understand that you'd have to be fairly, you know, dense to do that. But perhaps scoring only 0.13 out of 7?
Only would be good. That's just a very lax.
Pardon me?
That's all right.
Okay, so there's been a motion.
I'm proposing to substitute only. I'm proposing, I don't want to make it an amendment or anything like that. I'm asking if there's consent that
okay.
it's perhaps.
So here's what I'll do to just kind of move things along a little bit. So I'm going to motion to replace the word upholstery with the word only.
Second.
Is there a second? Is there any dissent to doing that? No? Okay, then we just replace the word upholstery with the word only. Did you get that? Good. Okay. Great. So what was your next amendment, Matt?
The next one was 4344. And in terms of, I saw this as duplicative of the earlier one we talked about. But in this case, in the interest of time, I don't know if anyone has any feelings on that. Actually, that would be the next one, though.
We can make a motion to replace remedy this inadequacy to improve this score. Motion to replace on line 44, remedy this inadequacy to improve this score.
That sounds great to me, so I would second that.
Okay, so Naj has made a motion to, on lines 44, replace the words remedy this adequacy, to replace yes. those words with to improve this score having the antecedent of the 1.3 out of 7. Is there a second on the motion?
Second.
There's a second. Okay, we'll now move into discussion on the motion. Is there any discussion on the motion? No? Okay, then I'll call the question. Is there any dissent to this amendment? All right, seeing no dissent, we will replace the words remedy this inadequacy with the words improve this score. Did you get that?
Yes.
Okay, great. Matt, did you have more?
I have two more, and I'll be quick. 49, so in essence, a resolve clause saying, be it therefore resolved, the university assembly requests the following, and then in essence, leave the rest. I mean, on line 50, we would strike therefore. Yes.
So it would be.
So we're adding.
49, yes, it would say, line 49, in essence, between, it would say, be it therefore resolved, the university assembly requests the following actions. and then a colon, and then the following things below it.
I'm not sure. 49 is blank.
Yes, it's meant to be. It's inserting.
Okay. So there's been a motion to amend the resolution such that on line 49 it reads, "Be it therefore resolved, the University Assembly requests the following actions," semicolon. Is there a second on the motion?
Request. And then with that, he also said on line 50 that it therefore would be changed further.
Yes.
Say that again.
It's also on line 50, therefore be changed further. It's just the.
Okay, yeah, well, yeah, that's good. So is there a second on the motion?
A second.
There's been a second. Okay, so we'll now move into discussion on the motion. If you have opinion, Anna.
This is an overly complicated edit. It doesn't add enough to make it worth going through all this right now. Sorry.
Great. Okay. Would anyone else like to be on the speakers list for this before we vote? Bob?
I agree with Anna.
Okay. Anyone else? No? Alec?
I agree with Bob.
I will draw the motion.
We're gonna call the question. Yeah, so we'll vote on that. If you're, are you withdrawing or not?
I'll withdraw. I make life easier for everyone.
Thank you. What was your last one? What was your last?
The last one, yeah. In this case, you know, I'm just gonna withdraw the last one to save everyone.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll move. Thank you for that. Anna?
That we strike line 70 onwards because we, the UA, are not Christopher, Hannah, Julie, etc., and replace it with what are we replacing with?
The standard language.
Replacing with the standard language.
Okay, so there's been a motion to strike everything before everything after line 70 and just replace it with the standard signature block. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? Okay, so we'll move into discussion of the amendment. Is there anyone who would like to speak on the motion to strike it? Essentially all the signatures.
Well, I actually, don't we, and even when we strike them all, we place them at the bottom saying something about who was presented this or something. There's some other language. I'm sorry, I didn't find it, but I didn't look it up. But I remember that the UA sends it, but then it says at the behest or something like that. I mean, be underneath the names of people who were involved in putting it together.
So I can speak on it. So traditionally, what's happened is the resolutions passed through committees will have the chair as the sponsor, and then all those resolutions will list the members of the committee through which it was passed. In this case, I think that the Student Assembly Committee actually passed a similar resolution, and so a lot of the people who worked on that were listed. I hope that answers your question.
So these folks would be listed as people who worked on it.
On the Student Assembly.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
They're all Student Assembly people.
Yes.
What you're saying is that they wouldn't.
Yeah, the normal format, I think, is it's just the members of the committee. But if you get me all their email addresses, I can CC them when it's conveyed. So they know.
Point of information, would we just want to add them under the on behalf of, where we stick them instead of there? Would that be easier? Do you think we'll log?
All right, so a lot of this is procedural, and we can handle that after the resolution is addressed. So,
well, I'm simply interested, and the reason I brought it up is having the names and organizations listed somewhere on the resolution that we are passing as members. I think it's a reasonable.
Okay. That's fine. Anna?
So I can see your concerns here, and I actually sympathize with a lot of them because this is a matter of giving credit, and our shared governance resolution system is really bad at giving credit. My concern is that at the moment, this looks like we are sending it from the Student Assembly. These are entirely undergraduate organizations, or entirely undergraduates, sorry. And so I really do like the option of Gabe CCing them on the email. And I also feel bad about striking all these names, but I think that's what we should do as the university assembly.
Did you do something you wanted to add?
I think striking the names is a fine option, just because most of these names are not student assembly, but actually people who are just in Climate Justice Cornell or NC International who will support the document, not necessarily work on the document. For instance, Jenny's name is not even on the document currently. So we can give the people who worked on the resolution credit in other means.
Okay. Okay. So is there anyone else who'd like to speak on the motion to strike line 70 and below or above, depending on how you put it number wise, and replace it with the standard signature block?
Motion to call the question.
No, okay. There's a motion to call the question. Is there any dissent? Since there was contention on this, I'm actually going to ask that we vote. So if you're in favor of striking the names and replacing it with the standard signature block, please raise your hand. Or placard. You don't have it. Yeah. One, two, but thank you. But one, two, three, four, five, six. All right, if you're opposed, if you'd like to abstain. All right, by a vote of 16-0-1, we have stricken the signatures, and I'll make it by them accordingly. And would also like to thank you for your hard work on this. Your credit does not go unrecognized.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll now move back into the original speakers list on the resolution. First speakers list, going once. Okay, Anna.
Move the question.
Second.
Second.
There's been a motion to move the question. There's a second. Is there any dissent to voting on the resolution? Okay, seeing no dissent, we will vote. If you are in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand or placard. If you are opposed to the resolution, please raise your hand or placard. If you'd like to abstain. All right, by a vote of 16-0-1, UA resolution number 6 passes. Congratulations. I just also want to say thank you very much for your hard work on this, Naj.
Thank you, and Julie, and
others. Yeah, Bob, did you have any?
Yes, I'd like to thank you too, and I'd also like to move that the UA formally thank the people whose names we just struck.
Let's formally thank those people. I know a lot.
Really quick, two things. One is, Matt, really appreciated if you can bring like big things like that ahead of time.
Yes, I was thinking.
Thank
Andrea.
You.
Yeah.
And really, the signature block isn't about credit, because most likely it's not going to get read anyway. The credit is really right here, and I'm going to echo what everyone else has said. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Anna, did you have something you wanted to add?
No, I have a motion.
Woo-hoo. Okay.
Because we are not going to finish this agenda today. We are not going to get to a lot of it today. I am motioning. We cannot do the minutes anyways because we have the wrong minutes. We have the October 17th minutes. Aren't we glad we waited to check before moving them? I am going to suggest, actually, that we just do the committee reports fast, and we will have to address our resolutions and the update on the ad hoc next week.
So there's been a motion to do the committee reports fast.
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. So that, is there any dissent to doing the committee reports fast? No? Okay. Then let's do the committee reports fast. Anna, you're first, actually.
Okay. When you have giant amendments like that, email. Jeremy already said, we're good.
Great. Matt?
Oh, absolutely. So students team met last week. Our last meeting is tomorrow. We are having the administrative chairs of the University Review Board His youth working group met yesterday. We'll be meeting next week. If anyone wants to more details, I'd be happy to provide them. Please email me. We'll talk to me after.
You guys don't have to speak more quickly. Maybe just like.
That was just math.
Yeah, that's a good
math.
Okay. Next. Joe?
We had a meeting today where we discussed our future goals for next semester. We're going to be meeting with the fitness centers next semester. We're going to be meeting with a couple people from Cornell Health to regard mental health services on campus and a litany of other issues, including consolidating information across campus so that they're in more accessible places for people to access them.
Okay. Campus Infrastructure Committee, Naj?
So this is a resolution we've been working on for a while. We also have one more on our docket right now. Since this is our last meeting of the year,
Nope, we got one next week. Okay. Yeah, happy Halloween.
Maybe you'll see our resolution there next week. Yes, those are the main updates. So I think we're going to be meeting tomorrow as well.
Okay, so that's the committee reports. Now we'll do, we move the assembly reports. So, John, anything?
What should we do? So last week we just had a presentation by VP Lombardi and the provost Kolkoff about the master housing plan, and we also, in relation to that, kind of passed the resolution to create a proposal for a queer inclusive housing option. It got passed unanimously with my abstention, just personally for abstentions, and yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions for John? No. Okay. Then Rena.
We had our last meeting yesterday, and we had two presentations, one from SCLAG and another one from Dean Newth and VP Molina on the tax reform bill.
Any questions for Rena?
No.
Okay, then Ulysses isn't here. Yeah, so that would be.
So our last meeting, we had Sarah come in and give the 2017 Cornell Climate and Sustainability update for the EA. Next meeting, we have the president coming to speak at our meeting, so be sure to stop by.
Is that the president's report to staff? Is that
yes.
Okay. Okay. Faculty Senate, Charlie?
Nothing to say because I gave you an update 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Linda, did you have something you wanted to add on that?
No, I just have a point of information. We have another meeting this year, and when is
so
it?
That's where I was next.
Okay.
And I was going to inform everyone that we have a meeting scheduled for December 5th in 1 week.
Did you send an invitation for that yet, or?
So the office sends those.
Okay.
There's
yeah.
an invitation Ooh. With place TBA.
Yeah. So
we'll, I do see it.
So we'll definitely coordinate that. But yes, just so everyone's aware, there is a meeting next week. We did vote on this at the October meeting to approve this in case we have unfinished business because we canceled the meeting for Halloween. I was actually going to bring that up. One thing that I think is actually important is I was contacted by the president's office in my capacity as chair of the UA to meet with the president about the JA reappointment process. So if you have any questions about that, I'm meeting with her this week. So just like let me know if you have thoughts on that. We can do that offline. How about we move the liaison reports to next time? We're out of time, so is there a motion to adjourn? If not, we can keep going through the business.
No, we're out of time. It's done.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay, so there's been a motion to adjourn. There's a second. Is there any dissent to adjourn? No. All right. Great. Show's over.
You can't adjourn anymore.